Welcome to Beyond the Stories, a creative business podcast for those looking to find freedom and fulfillment in the work that they do. With me, business coach and therapist, Lauren O'Sullivan. Hello, hope you're well and having a good week. So today's Beyond the Stories guest is marketeer turned potter Katie Robbins, who you may also know by her Instagram name, Ceramic Magpie. So after doing an A-level in art at a very academic school, Katie fell into a career in marketing. But when Katie became a mum, she knew that she had a creative itch that she needed to scratch, and she embarked on a period of experimentation that led her to rediscover her love for ceramics. In this episode, Katie talks about how she turned her passion into the beautiful artisan business that she runs today. We go into a lot of detail about what that journey looked like for Katie and why you don't always need a plan. We also delve a little bit deeper into the fears and the self-doubt that can arise through marketing yourself and marketing your business. And Katie talks candidly about the stories that she had to overcome to put herself out there and do the work she really wanted to be doing. Anyway, that's enough from me. I hope you enjoy our chat. Here's Katie. Katie, hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lauren, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm very excited to chat to you, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I went for a run this morning for the first time in about 4 weeks because I'd hurt my knee. And actually, it was, you know, really nice to get the blood pumping and have a bit of sunshine on my face. So, yeah, it's put me in a good mood for today.
Oh,
bearing in mind the fact everything else is going on, you know, sometimes I feel kind of guilty for enjoying my own kind of existence, but yeah.
But you always need that. You need to fill your own cup up with those things, don't you, before you can kind of carry on with your day, whether that's for your business, your kids, life, whatever that is. It's nice just to do those things for you that help everybody, I think, in the end.
Yeah, I think you're so right. You know, you've got to look after yourself first before you can look after anyone else. And if you are a mum, you know, or a partner, you've got to be there for everyone else as well as yourself.
And I think it's just, obviously, at the moment we're recording during coronavirus, which is, you know, it's a challenging time for everybody. So I think anything that you can do to kind of just keep yourself feeling sane, normal, and just keep those elements and bits in your life feel grounded as much as normal as possible. Don't know, that's all we can do, really.
I know. And also, you know, I don't know if it's almost a bit like just trying to trick myself, but I am a bit up and down. And I know that, you know, I've got, like, it's my mum's, but would have been my mum's birthday at the weekend, and I lost her 2 years ago. So I just have to kind of trick myself into feeling happy as well sometimes, because I know that I've got other things which are always in the background bubbling away. It throws up other things, the whole thing about coronavirus.
No, I think you're right. That I think it emphasises anything like that, doesn't it? Any kind of things that are in the background. And I don't know whether it's just, not necessarily that you have more time, but we're just in this really concentrated situation. I don't know if I'm explaining this really well, but it's like you're in this concentrated situation that just, like, throws a light on everything, like your life and the things you're doing and the things that have happened. So I definitely understand that.
Yeah, I've been doing quite a lot of self-reflection recently, because I started, have you heard of the Morning Pages, Julia Cameron?
Yeah, got it here actually on my desk.
Ah, are you doing it at the moment?
Well, I bought it, I don't know, I bought it about, I don't know, 6 months ago when I first moved into this house, and I did stick with it for a couple of weeks and really, really enjoyed it. But I think it's just like those things, like you said, like the running or doing those things for you, it easily falls by the wayside. So if anybody's not heard of The Artist's Way, a big component of it is basically journaling for, it's 3 pages of continuous writing each and every morning. And yeah, I did start that, but I think it's hard to keep that up. It's hard to create that time every morning and do that.
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of an early riser because basically I don't sleep. Which is a bit frustrating. So I don't need an alarm clock. So, like, today,
you're up anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was awake at 4:30, but I didn't get up to 6:15. But I think that's still quite early, isn't it? So
it's
quite easy for me to kind of spend half an hour writing, and I don't really, if it's 3 pages, if it's a page, it just I don't think it really matters. It's that thing about brain dumping everything, which is kind of niggling in your head, which you don't even realize is niggling in your head. And then that just allows you to approach the day with a kind of clearer vision. And
it definitely does,
I was slightly skeptical about it, but recently I've just been having so many ideas, and it's really kind of it's really exciting to just kind of let myself do stuff that I wouldn't normally. And I suppose it's kind of one of those silver linings of the situation we're in, whereas normally I'd be like, oh, I've got to make for the next shop update, or I've got to make for a gallery, or, you know, somebody wants these things that I've all got to make exactly the same. It's just given me a bit of space to kind of, just try new things.
I think when you are kind of creative and you have these ideas and it's happening day to day, you don't always, I find, tend to capture them. So having that point in the day where you can write these ideas down and you take them out of your head and get them on paper, I think it makes it much, much easier to take some of those ideas and maybe kind of experiment with them or put them into action.
Yeah, definitely. I think I read something from the Design Trust. It's about like making plans and setting goals. You're much more likely to achieve your goal if you write it down. So I don't know why. It's some kind of scientific thing about, I don't know the detail behind it, but the percentage of people who then go on to realize their goals is a lot higher than those who just kind of think about them.
It's that first step, isn't it, to making it more tangible and real. It's just an idea until you actually put it on paper. And when it's on paper, it's in the world, even though it's not necessarily in action, it's still in the world in some kind of tangible form, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Katie, I wanted to ask you, so your ceramic magpie on Instagram, can you tell me a little bit about how your love for ceramics and pottery began?
Sure. Back in the day when I was at school, I did. I went to a very academic school, and there was art there, but it wasn't. I mean, people did do art A level, but not that many people, because it was, you know, it was very academic. I did art AS level, and there were some pottery components in that. And so I made some quite strange, actually. They're like architectural inspired pieces. So they're quite angular. Colours that we had in the studio were all kind of, it was the 80s, but it was like 70s colours, you know, the browns, the greys, kind of dark colours, really. So it couldn't be more removed from anything that I make now. And
do you still have those pieces?
Yes.
Do you? Yeah.
I don't know why. I'm one of these terrible people who never throw anything away.
But I think it's nice to still have those to look back.
Yeah, it is. It is. Although one of the things in the morning pages I found quite interesting, and this, everybody's always going on about decluttering, and it kind of used to get on my nerves. But there is something about letting go of like things that no longer serve you, so then you can let new things into your life which do serve you better. So I don't know, maybe I could keep them but not have them on display. I don't know.
I think it depends how it makes you feel, because I'm a bit like this with the decluttering thing. I think if you like open a cupboard and there's things there that you've just kind of kept hold of, and you know when you just open the cupboard and you just get that feeling like, oh, I don't want to deal with that, or I don't I think that's when you need to sort things out. But then when you if you have something on display, or you open your cupboard and you've got your things there that remind you of a certain time, or that gives you a really nice feeling about something, then I think that's fine then. And I think something like that, particularly something that you do now as a career, and those were kind of like the earliest examples of that, I think that's really nice to have.
Yeah, like my mom had all my old pieces of artwork, and I'd never want to throw those away. So yeah, no, you know, it is good to keep some things from your past. Sorry, I went off on a complete tangent then. So no. you asked me about how I got into pottery. So I did some at school. My kind of main career after education was marketing, and I used to enjoy doing a lot of part-time courses in the evenings. So I did felt making and textiles, and I did a couple of pottery courses then, and I quite enjoyed those. And then it wasn't really until after I'd had children, I then did a few other kind of like creative courses in the, you know, wanted to regain a bit of me time because I didn't go back to work. I'd made the decision that I wanted to stay at home and look after the kids. But then
left your marketing job then?
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of your old marketing job, did you enjoy that at the time? And did you know you wanted something different, you know, when you left that?
Yeah, but well, basically, it was one of those things where you just fall into a job. I'd kind of like first job that I took after I graduated, more or less. Yeah, it was first like real job. And then I just stayed there and it kind of became like a family because it's a fairly small company. It then got bought out by another one. And it was kind of like love-hate relationship, really, because like the people who'd like trained you up wanted to keep you there. And there were lots of aspects of the job that I did enjoy. We organised photo shoots for clients and I'd get involved in, you know, sometimes helping style the products. And we used to produce literature and leaflets. So it was like, you know, it was a creative design element there. And it was very sociable. And I think you're based in marketing, aren't you? So it's quite a buzzy kind of environment, but there were lots of negatives to it, really. It was kind of very highly pressurized environment. We were working with press, deadlines. It was very female, and that can create, I think, quite a, you know, a difficult working environment, really. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I didn't know that I wanted to get out, but, you know, I had been quite unhappy for quite a long time. And so when I had children, it was stressful and it was hard working, and I didn't really see how I could juggle those two things.
Yeah, it's a very intense environment, isn't it, marketing?
I think
no matter what industry you work in marketing for, I think it's very results driven, it's very deadline driven, it's very competitive. It's a lot of pressure. I think, you know, a lot of pressure is put on you in that position. And I think, it is very creative, like I said, it is very varied. And I think maybe that's the thing that maybe attracted you and I to it, but I understand that that's not conducive necessarily to having kids and, you know, to kind of being in that stressful job and trying to bring up a family at the same time.
No, I mean, I admire everybody who can do it. But I also think it is quite a young industry as well. I mean, I do have friends who are still doing it, but, you know, they're the oldest ones there these days. You know what I mean?
So when you were doing, when you became a mum and at the same time you were doing evening courses in various different creative things, there's obviously a creative itch there that you're trying to scratch, I suppose. Were you actively looking for something else that may become a career, or were you doing that at the time really just to do something you enjoyed doing?
Yeah, I was just doing it for fun. I was just, you know, just wanted to. Well, I was telling someone actually that I did sewing at first because I thought, oh, I do something useful. You know, I've got the chance to do something with my time and I want to do something useful. So actually, I did make some curtains and some cushions and I did kind of enjoy doing that. But I think it's the, I think I've always liked making things. But I wasn't kind of thinking, oh, what side hustle could I have? It wasn't about that. It was definitely doing it for the sake of doing it, because I enjoy doing it. And then I found this lady who did porcelain, because I'd always wanted to work with porcelain because it was white. I don't know why. And I just, the glazes that we had at the studio were all kind of a bit like muddy coloured. Like the browns and the greens and the greys. And I like the idea of porcelain. You can be quite delicate and it's got kind of like a quite luxury kind of finish and feel to it. So then I found this lady who worked in porcelain. And we did slip work where you create a mold out of plaster, and you pour the liquid porcelain in, and then you can pour it back out. So then you can do decorative things on the outside, or you can do marbling or inlay, which is where you scrape out bits of the clay and then you fill it with a different colour. So you've got like, it's like drawing with clay. So I did that for a while. And then there was a exhibition based at the centre, and I put something in and it sold. And it was so exciting that somebody liked my stuff enough to buy it. So that was quite a major kind of moment really, where I thought, oh, is there something in this? Could I make something of this, really?
Yeah. So at that time when you entered the exhibition, that it wasn't something necessarily that was even on your mind, that this could be something that you could turn into a business?
No, not at that stage. Then when I sold it, and then I was doing, I have a friend who'd also worked at the same agency that I used to work at, but she was on the design side, and she'd left there and she was working to create felted vessels. And she was the one who's like, oh, Katie, you should really, you know, you could really do this. You could make things and, you know, people would buy them, because it's quite a big thing about being an artist, that whether other people like what you do, because it's very personal.
So when your friend had, or your colleague had mentioned to you that this was an idea that could potentially be a business, how long did that then take for you thinking, okay, yeah, this could work? Was that something kind of you thought, yeah, let's start this?
So I was doing classes at the MAC, and then the MAC is the place where I used to do the classes, Midlands Arts Centre.
Yeah.
And they had a open studio pass, so I took that up. So I was kind of spending, you know, a couple of days there a week making things. And then I did the first thing where I sold something, I did like an at home. So just, I invited like friends round, and that went quite well, actually. Obviously the work was really quite cheap, and you know, your friends are there and they want to support you, but I'm just putting myself down here. But obviously I made work that people wanted to buy. And then I think I did like the school Christmas fair, which is always like ridiculous thing to do, really. It's like having pottery at a junior school. Like, oh, stay away, everybody, from that. And then I did like a few like local markets, and I think we got to the stage where like my partner was just like so upset with me that I was always taking over like the dining room table with all of my stuff. And we had a conservatory which we weren't using, because it was still quite a new house for us at the time. But it was a conservatory where it was like too hot in summer, too cold in winter, so it wasn't being used. So we converted that into my studio. And I looked it up, actually, and that was just over 5 years ago. So it feels like a long time and a short time at the same time. So, yeah, I've been in my studio now for over 5 years, which is... yeah, it's quite, you should really mark these milestones. I need to do that.
Definitely. I think sometimes that's the thing, when you kind of really heads down and you're working on something, especially when you're kind of working on a business and you always feel like you're looking up at the mountain, you've definitely got to take stock and pause and look down at how far you've come. And I think sometimes you could be quite surprised, actually, about how far you have moved on in a period of time.
Yes, especially when you don't really have, like, I know we talked about plans and projects earlier, but I didn't have like a 5-year plan for my business. I've never, you know, I haven't really gone about it with a really corporate hat on. In fact, like, my corporate hat fell off quite a long time ago, and now I've become one of those scatty creatives who forget things, and I forget appointments, even though they're written in my diary. But I don't look at my diary because I'm not sat at a desk going into the studio. So
terrible appointments.
Are you?
Really bad. Yeah, I think I'm an organised person in a lot of ways, but things like any kind of appointments or admin, I don't know why, it just seems to be beyond beyond me. So I totally get that. Did you have any, so you, in terms of having a corporate 5-year plan. You didn't have that, but did you have any kind of business plan in mind when you set out and thought, right, I think I can turn this into a business? I suppose, particularly being a marketer, did you have an idea about how you could go about marketing yourself and set yourself up and things like that?
No, I'm terrible. I just, it sounds awful to just wing it, but I did just wing it. I just kind of, you know, my main marketing tool was Instagram. And at the beginning, like, Instagram was amazing for me and my account grew really quickly. And everything I did, you know, I kind of thought about what I was doing and it kind of worked for me. So, you know, I ran hashtag challenges. I got involved with the community. I did artist swaps. I put myself out there in terms of, like, attending like meetups where I thought I might be, you know, meet some interesting creatives and other people. So I kind of, you know, for me, Instagram was like a key focus, but it was also a key focus because I was alone working in my studio. And I, you know, even now it can be hard sometimes when you don't have any kind of that much external contact with people. You know, Lauren, you're the first person I've spoken to apart from my partner, but, you know, then you feel like you've got a lot to say.
Yeah, it can be quite lonely, and I think as well, if you are a creative person or you're running your own business, I think sometimes you can want to develop your ideas through talking about them. And I think sometimes it's only when you can chat through your ideas and bounce them off with somebody else, and ideally somebody else that understands. I think that's all part of the process sometimes. And it is difficult if you're on your own and not necessarily getting that connection. And absolutely, that is what Instagram offers the opportunity to do, I think.
No, I agree. I was going to say that originally Instagram was like a real focus and it was really important to me. And then, when, you know, when the algorithm came in and then you didn't see things chronologically anymore, my account, the growth kind of like slowed right down. And it was a stage where like some people were even like losing numbers. And I didn't, that's never really happened to me. But it was quite a shock from suddenly being on like this, you know, this dopamine high of getting all these likes coming in. And then it's kind of, sounds awful when you put it like this, because I know a lot of people who don't have a high following count then think, oh God, why is she getting upset that she hasn't had so many likes? And oh, isn't that pathetic? But it can be a shock to the system and it can feel personal and it can feel like, yeah, it can really feel really personal. And it took me quite a long while to get my head around the fact that this isn't personal. That's just my business account. It's got nothing to do with me as a person and it doesn't, you know, devalue what I do. So I've got a much healthier relationship with Instagram now, and I've still got like a fabulous community who support me. And, you know, I really, you know, I enjoy chatting on Instagram and finding out what people are doing and, you know, being inspired. But it's not the same place that it was, you know, like 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
No, it's definitely not. I mean, in terms of how I use Instagram for my business, I've only really started in the last year. But I was really heavily involved. So in my old marketing job, Instagram was a huge part of what I did in different businesses. So I kind of felt immersed in it, but obviously not from a personal point of view. And I have to admit, I have been surprised how difficult it has been to grow my following. And I think I thought I would find it easier than I have done. And I think you're right, those changes that happened around that time, it's just a completely different landscape now to how it was. And I think people are using it in different ways. I think a lot of it, I won't say it's saturated, but I think, I don't know if people are actively looking to follow other people in the same way as they were a year, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to follow somebody now, I think about it a lot, because I think I already follow, like, I don't know, like I'm already following like 1,500 people, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you're thinking you want to create a relationship with these people, I've got to really connect with them now before I follow them, because you know, it's, you can't follow everybody at the end of the day. But I think, I know you said there isn't saturation, but I kind of feel that there is a little bit of saturation. Yeah. And I feel that there's a lot of, I mean, I know I went on courses to improve my Instagram because I was feeling a bit down about it. And then you kind of end up now, I see things on there and I'm like, oh, she did the course. And, you know, and it's fine. You know, you only learn by copying your style. But then if you're going on there to be inspired and then you're just seeing the same, it kind of, it's not quite such an inspiring place to be.
Absolutely. It's funny because I was interviewed on myself on another podcast this week, and it was all about digital strategy, and it was very similar to this in that a big change in digital and Instagram in the last 5 years is people's knowledge.
You see a lot of tropes and you see a lot of people using the same kind of style of image because they've been taught that, and it's fine to start somewhere. Then it means it's not quite the kind of place for inspiration as it used to be.
Yeah, and everything becomes very similar, I think, as well. And you're totally right. You definitely see that happening. And I think as well, because Instagram works in niches, I think your niche then becomes saturated by those type of things. So by the default, you see even more of that as well. And it's harder to break out of that bubble of it. So I know I definitely understand what you mean from that perspective. I think the interesting thing that you said just then, in particular, that real value that you place on following somebody in terms of that you've got to really connect with that person or think, yeah, you know, I really want to follow this person. And I am absolutely the same with that now. I really make a considered decision about who I follow. And I think that's really interesting in terms of how that plays out in terms of marketing on Instagram in general, because I think even though maybe it's become more saturated and it's harder to get followers, I really, really think, you know, believe and have seen in action that those followers that you do have are much more for you sort of thing. People are much on board with what it is that you're doing. So I think on smaller followings, you can have much more impact than you would have done, I think, you know, with bigger followings in the past. And I've genuinely seen that in action, and those follower numbers really, I don't think, matter half as much as they used to.
No, I think you're definitely right. I think it's having your people and having the loyal people. And when I said, like, oh yes, I don't do any marketing apart from Instagram, that's not quite true, because probably two and a half years ago, I set up my mailing list, and the mailing list is really it's really important to me, those people who've signed up and want to hear from me on a regular basis, rather than me just putting something out on Instagram and me hoping that the right person might see it at the right time. You know, your mailing list is always yours. And although people don't always get like getting loads of emails, I think anybody who's starting out in a business, that's the one thing that I say to them, is when you're doing your market, make sure you've got a sign-up form there, because it's your customers, isn't it? And it's one of the things I did when I, you must know this, Lauren, about for marketing, I did a diploma in marketing. And the main thing I got from that course was customer relationship management. So just having repeat customers is much more important than trying, and much easier to handle than trying to find new people. So although I do kind of want to grow, but that's never really my focus. My focus is on giving value to the people who already follow me, and whether that's, you know, giving them inspiration about how they can, you know, display their latest bars, or if it's giving them some tips, if they're makers themselves, about how they can grow their business. Yeah, that's kind of like my kind of main focus, really.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I think the thing about the email list as well is that is a huge step from, and a completely different thing. Clicking follow to follow somebody on Instagram is such a quick, easy thing to do that, you know, maybe you do think about it, maybe some people don't think about it. But to move over to somebody's website to be interested enough in what they're doing to put your email in and invest in receiving their email. I think that is a really big step. I think those people who sign up to your email are invested in you. And, you know, that's such a valuable thing in terms of being able to build a relationship with a customer or a client base. That's so much more, isn't it? That, because it is a relationship, it does become a relationship. And especially, you know, for you, Katie, and other people that are so passionate about what it is that they do, to find people that connect with that and to be able to talk to them through email, which is more personal. And I think that can really not just help evolve your business, but I think it's finding those people that are going to come back and connect and buy again.
And it's been invaluable to have that now, where I haven't been able to, you know, not that I do that many markets, but where I'm not selling externally, and I've got, you know, this list of people who, you know, are happy to support me. And I'm just, you know, I'm just so humbled and grateful, because on the one hand, I think, oh my God, we're about to head into the, you know, the world's worst depression that we've ever known, and people still want to buy a pretty coloured vase and put some flowers in it. And I, you know, I'm glad they do, but at the same time, I know it's a big ask to you know, spend your money on something which maybe isn't always useful. But you know, I think it is important to have these things which bring us joy. You know, it's not like we're shopping for clothes at the moment, is it? So I'm pointed out, you know, you haven't got your commute, although some people are going back to work now, but a lot of people are still, that I know, are still working from home. They're not buying a coffee on the way to work. They're not buying a lunch out. So for people who've been furloughed, actually, you know, not that we've got more disposable income, but, you know, you can spend, you can prioritise what you spend your money on in different ways, I suppose.
And if you're spending a lot of time in your home, something like a beautiful vase or a beautiful mug for your morning brew, those are things that are going to give you that little, you know, that moment of joy in your day. And I think at the moment there's definitely appetite for that, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the heads. Do you do any meditation?
Again, I've tried that, but I didn't really stick with it for that long. But I have tried one of the meditation apps. Yeah,
I do like the Headspace app, and it's like a morning wake up, and it's really good. And like one, some of the things with that, it's all about you know, you can't change the future, you can't even change what's happening around you. And once you get into this kind of level of acceptance, then actually the day to day becomes a lot easier to deal with. And I feel a bit silly saying it, but it's all about being more mindful and just, you know, just enjoying like everyday experiences, and you know, being thankful and grateful for what we've got. And it can be quite hard to allow yourself that indulgence sometimes, but I don't know, to me it's really, really important.
And I think it's those things that help us adjust, like, because I've been really surprised how quickly you do adjust to this situation. Like, if people would have told us this 6 months ago that you couldn't see your families, you couldn't go out of your home, you know, you wouldn't be going to work, all these different things, I think we'd be in a state of shock. We wouldn't believe it. But actually, you very quickly acclimatized to that. And I think it's right. It's those little things that we do in our day to day that helps us be resilient to that and acclimatize to, you know, to this new way of living that we've got at the moment and for the foreseeable.
Yeah, although ironically my life hasn't really changed that much, apart from the fact that I now have to like extra lunch partners, and yeah, have to share my living space with a husband who's like on really loud Zoom calls the whole time. Anyway, it's fine, I've got a studio that I can escape to. But yeah, no, I think it's hardest on the kids, really. I mean, I've got two sons. And the youngest is, his school are brilliant. Like, it's really structured and he's got stuff that he needs to do. Whereas the other one, they're a bit more, oh, yeah, well, you need to get this done in the next couple of weeks. And it's so hard to, because he's got no structure now. And he's like, he's getting up later and later every day and, you know, going to bed later and later. And I can't get him to leave the house. It's horrible for him, I think. And like the thought that, God, he's got another 3 months of that until September. I mean,
it's a long time. It's a lot to ask of them, I think, as well. It's, you know, I suppose kids are, you know, they are adaptable, but it's hard. You know, children are not meant to, you know, be isolated and not be able to see the friends, and you know, it must be frustrating.
Yeah, just need to get him out of his bedroom.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got any tips for that. I suppose going back to like Instagram and, you know, how you promoted your business, and I suppose those realities of putting your plan into action of, you know, working for yourself. What were the main challenges that you faced in that period? Did it kind of all run smoothly? Did, you know, how did that look for you?
I think a lot of it for me is the, not the fear of being judged, but it is quite hard to put yourself out there. And I've always wanted to share kind of like process and journey. So I've always tried to, I've always been a bit too timid about actively selling myself. And, you know, I've just been happier to talk about, this is what I'm working on, and this is how I do it. Because it is quite hard, I think, to actively sell. And although I've always been happy to talk about my work, to then say, this is for sale, I want you to buy it, is quite, I think that is quite a hard thing. It's one of those things where, like in marketing, it's always much easier to sell somebody else's work. And when it's yourself, it can be quite personal.
It's completely different, isn't it? It's just, it's crazy how different it is. I think it's interesting you say about, you know, sharing your process and how you work, because that is the one thing that sticks at the forefront of my mind from your account and what you do, because I love how you share like the little moments in your workshop and like how you actually create your pieces. That to me is really what makes you stand out, and definitely what made me connect with you through Instagram was seeing those moments in that process. And I think that's a really nice thing to share. And I think it does definitely helps to build that relationship with people.
Well, that's really interesting. I think for quite a long while, I got stuck on my gallery about it having to be perfectly curated. And I didn't like lose faith in my own ability to photograph, but I kind of ran out a bit of creative steam there, and thought it would be better use of someone else's time to, or better use of my time if somebody else did a lot of the photographs for it. So I kind of kept it, for a long while, I kept it just kind of like product focused. And then I decided that actually it didn't really feel that authentic to be doing that. And I started to bring in just quite a lot more shots of me, actually, and which is, again, it can feel a bit weird. Like, I put a picture up yesterday, and I was like, hi, this is like smiling me. And like, sometimes I think, oh my God, people would just think, God, can she get over herself? But
it's so funny because those are the bits that I think people really respond to, and that, you know, that post yesterday and the post with you in it are the ones definitely where, I don't know, I think those, to me, I love seeing those kind of posts, and those are definitely the ones that stand out. And it is, as much, you know, you've got really beautiful products, so that obviously that is the forefront of what you do, and it's lovely to see that as well. But I think having you talk about it and see you and see your passion, for me, that's absolutely like where the magic is and what makes it.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear. Sorry. Yeah, no, thank you. For ages I was doing more kind of like the behind the scenes on stories, and I've, you know, gradually I'm trying to bring that more into the gallery. I think, like, you know, 3 years ago, the curated gallery was all the thing, whereas now people are much happier to have like more everyday stuff on there. And I think you're right, you know, generally as people we are trained to like human faces, aren't we? And then so it's weird when you think there's like that whole vogue of like the whole faceless portrait, whereas really we just, you know, we want to see who's doing, you know, especially like if it's a maker, you want to know who's making that thing, don't you? Well, I do. If you're going to buy something handmade, you want to understand its origin and, you know, how it was made, who made it, what they like, etc.
That's part of what people are buying into in a way, isn't it? They're buying into you as much as they're buying into the products you sell, which again, I think is a really nice relationship to have with your customers. It's not just a transaction between a product and the money. It's, you know, it's a relationship you build with them.
Yeah. I'm in a coaching group. I joined it about 6 months ago. Josephine Brooks a Nurture and Thrive community. And it was pitched at kind of like side hustlers, but I'd always like followed Josephine, and like, I know she's kind of talks a lot of sense, and I used to love her podcast, so I joined, and it's been really valuable. And one of the things she did a couple of months ago was a visibility bingo, and it was just kind of, she had like little prompts about suggestions about how, you know, you could be more visible, and it made a massive difference in terms of my approach. And probably, no, you've probably been following me in the last 6 months, those are the things that probably you'll have picked up on. So it's quite interesting, actually, this whole thing about the person rather than the product. Well, it's both, but, you know, it's as important.
Yeah, definitely. I think I wonder something like that where there is a prompt. I wonder if it's not necessarily the ideas of how to do something. Maybe it's the permission that it gives you to be able to do that. I think as humans, and I think even as women sometimes, we feel that we don't want to step out of place. And like you said, you worry what people think and they're going to judge you. And does that permission slip of, you know, the visibility bingo, that just kind of gives you that allowance to say, no, I can do this. And it's just interesting, isn't it? It's not necessarily the ideas of what you could do, because I'm sure you can think of all those yourself, but it's almost like the permission to do that.
Yeah, I think you are so right how we, you know, we're in this like feminist society, and yet we still kind of struggle to really value, well, at least I know I do, I still kind of struggle to value myself. And it's through the education that we've had all this time. I mean, I also, have you read the Tara Moore Playing Big?
I have, yeah.
That was such a game changer for me, because it really made me think about how I value myself and how I have undervalued myself. And it really kind of like helped change my mindset about a lot of things. And I think it was just after that I had this idea that I wanted to do this make time for tea and make time for blooms. And I was like, oh no, that's almost like, is that too big an idea for me? You know, who am I? I'm just like a potter. How can I, you know, what right do I have to make my products like these kind of soulful moments? But, you know, having read the book, it really did kind of give me a bit more confidence about what I should be doing and how I should be presenting myself.
I mean, the podcast obviously is called Beyond the Stories, and I think that's, you know, exactly what you've just said, like epitomizes that really. There's all these stories that we tell ourselves about what we should and we shouldn't be doing. And I think a huge part of setting up and running a business is getting in touch with yourself and being aware of some of those stories, because I think sometimes you just take them as they're a given. They're so ingrained in our conscious or unconsciousness that we don't even know, is this us speaking? Is this somebody else speaking? I think challenging some of those and asking yourself, what is the reality of this? And going back into yourself and asking, well, what is it that I want to do? And what is it that can I give? And who can I help? I think is a huge part of that process in creating a business that is you and that you're going to enjoy and is going to give you and the people you want to help the things that they need. In terms of those stories then, on your website, in your bio, you mentioned about the pottery helped you rediscover that sense of self-worth. And I was just really interested that to see if there were any stories that you'd have to overcome, and is that still an ongoing process for you?
I think it is still an ongoing process. I mean, it's interesting with the artist's way, there are these affirmations, and it's she's one of the, you, as well as the morning pages, which you talked about, where you write down, you kind of like brain dump all your feelings, there are kind of like exercises which are kind of meant to help you, you know, gain confidence and direction. And one of the exercises is the affirmations. So it's writing down these affirmations. And I think one of the affirmations is, I don't know, I am a prolific, not brilliant artist, but, you know, I make beautiful things, and how I can use my artist tools to nurture myself. And it's not a wrong thing to do, to be able to, you know, nurture the inner artist. So I've always kind of struggled a lot with self-confidence, and it is difficult to kind of put yourself out there. But I think, you know, with slow progress, these affirmations, they kind of do real, they do, I really do believe actually they do wire your brain.
They do, and I think it's those thoughts in us that are so ingrained, I think they really do rewire how the brain works. And I think it challenges those thoughts that are so ingrained in us. And it might feel a little bit contrived in the beginning. But I think just keep repeating and keep saying that, it actually does rewire some of those neural pathways in our brain. And it's been scientifically proven that we can do that. So, you know, I totally believe that works. And I think the ones in the artist way are really helpful as well.
Yeah, it's a shame I couldn't remember them. But they're not that ingrained. I do think it is a good exercise.
We'll put them in the show notes anyway, and people can take a look. I think that it is helpful. If I asked you, Katie, what success looks like, and if you think you have achieved it, what would you think?
I think that is such an interesting question, because it's so different for so many people, and a lot of people I think would answer, put a financial tag on what success is for them, but I don't actually. For me, success for me is kind of living my life as I want to, like, not being told by somebody else, you know, not getting up in the morning and being given a to-do list by somebody else. You know, I set my own agenda for the things that I want to achieve. And I am very happy actually with my life, and I'm content, you know, making things. So in a lot of respects, you know, if success equals happiness, then I'm fairly successful. But I think I've still got a long way to go. And I am, although I have been trying to work on this with my affirmations, I do kind of feel like my cup is slightly half full. I'm always thinking, well, I could be better at this, and I could be making bigger pots, and I could have a more beautiful colour range. And I'm always kind of striving towards the next level, which I think is a good thing. But yeah, the success question is, it's funny. I mean, I'm in a very lucky position where, you know, although my work does contribute to, you know, household expenses, it's not what's paying the mortgage. And, you know, I have to be honest about that. But I don't think it devalues what I do. I mean, for me, you know, it's been so important to find, you know, a purpose in my life. And I remember after I had, particularly, you know, after the kids were born, and I was slightly postnatal, but I never really got it checked out at the time, because you don't, do you? You just kind of, you know, you struggle on and you think that's normal. And somebody did say to me, you know, you need to find the thing which is going to motivate you. And, you know, I'm so lucky that, you know, I get up in the morning and I'm excited about, you know, going into the studio, and I can't wait to, you know, make the next thing. So I'm, you know, I'm very lucky in a lot of respects.
Yeah, I think that is, you know, to be able to get up and feel like that about the work that you're doing, I think that is the version of success, really, isn't it? So in terms of any advice, or anybody who was in your position 5 years ago, or maybe was stuck in that marketing job that they weren't happy with, what would you have any advice for somebody at the beginning of that creative journey?
Well, I think I'd say to them, just try different things and see what you enjoy doing.
I think it's experimenting is such a huge thing. I think just give yourself permission to experiment with things and not have all the answers is a really great place to start.
Yeah, exactly. Because I didn't know that, as we discussed, you know, I didn't know that I wanted to become a potter. I had no idea. I just know that I used to like playing with clay. And so, you know, it's the same for lots of other people. So it's sometimes you just have to give yourself the time to explore these things. Mm. So, you know, it's like kind of really looking at what you're doing. I mean, if you're at work, you know, 9 to 6, you probably don't have any energy then in the evenings to do anything. I know that I wouldn't. But, you know, use your weekend to do that new course that you've wanted to do for ages, or, you know, go on a wreath making or watercolour or, I don't know, whatever, candle making, and just see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I think creating that time and space for yourself to do that with no pressure and expectation as well is really key. And it's difficult, isn't it? I think I've been in that position when you're in that 9 to 5 job and you are really drained from it. And if you have got a family and you have got kids, that can sound really unachievable. But I think it's almost going back to that point at the beginning about being yourself and having your cup full before you can give to others. I really think part of that is, you know, if you've got something in you that you want to achieve, or you've got an ambition, or you want to kind of follow that creative journey, giving yourself that time and space is part of filling yourself up for other people. So I do think it's really, really important.
Yeah, scratch your creative itch.
Yeah, I think maybe that's what we should call this podcast. So what's next for you, Katie? What's next for you in the business? I know you mentioned a few things there that you'd kind of like to expand on in the future.
Yeah, I mean, really, like long term, I should be trying to get into one of like these pottery shows, like the Ceramic Art London, or, you know, Pot Fest, where, you know, you get lots of potters and they display their work, but they're quite expensive.
Do you have to pay to show up at those?
Yeah, you have to pay, and then it's like, you know, you have to set up, you've got to stay there for a couple of days. It's quite a big investment of your time. So yeah, in the short term, I'm excited about my extending my Make Time for Tea collection, as I only recently started making mugs. And it's really nice to make things that, you know, people are going to use every day and get some everyday enjoyment from. And so I've just started doing some teapots. So I'm just kind of experimenting with the design of those. I've got like some sugar bowls. I've got like milk pourers. And I want to create so you can have like the ultimate tea party.
That sounds right up my street, actually.
So, yeah, like whenever I used to go around to my mom, she'd always have like the creamer in the sugar bowl.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you're lucky if you get like, you know, 2 cups which are the same. I mean, I'm not saying everybody has to have like a matching set, but there's something quite nice about being able to have all the elements to kind of, you know, really kind of, right, we're really going to take our time and we're really going to enjoy this cup of tea. Always a slice of cake with it.
But I think that's nice. It's like taking that, the, you know, it's called, you know, time for tea, but it's taking that time, isn't it? And I think it's it makes it quite personal in terms of the work that you do. Your products are there to facilitate that, taking that moment, taking that time for tea. And I think it is quite personal.
Yeah, it's like this, you know, it's creating these happy moments, isn't it?
It is. No, it is. And I'm sure, well, I know your products do bring a lot of joy to people. And I think that's what it's all about at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, if I can spread a little joy. There's a great quote by William Morris: have nothing in your home that is not beautiful and useful. Or anyway, that isn't the quote. Yeah. But yeah, I love
it is,
that.
I think, yeah, it's got to be one or the other.
Yeah, I love the idea that, you know, I'm creating objects which are useful and beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And if people was like to come and see you online and take a look at some of your products, Katie, where can they find you?
My Instagram handle is Ceramic Magpie, and my website is katierobbinsceramics.com.
Well, thank you so much, Katie.
That's okay. Just a little side note, the Ceramic Magpie Instagram handle occurred because when I started off my social media on Pinterest, you know, and I was like, do you remember that time when you just used to spend ages on Pinterest looking for ideas about how to renovate your home and that kind of business. So the idea there was like seeing like all the shiny kind of ceramics and being drawn to it. And then sometimes I'm a bit like, oh, I don't really want to be a magpie because they're a horrible bird.
I love a ceramic magpie though. I think it conjures up a very, I don't know, I like the image that conjures.
The magpies like bright, shiny, pretty things. That we're going to go with that.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Katie. I really, really appreciate speaking to you today, and thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a really fun chat. I've really enjoyed it.
As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the things we discussed in today's show, especially if you're at the start of your creative business journey. Come and chat to Katie and I on Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. All the links for how to get in touch with us and everything else we discussed in the episode are in the show notes, which you can find in your podcast app or on my website, laurenosullivan.com/beyondthestoriespodcast. Also, if you've enjoyed today's episode, I'd really love it if you could pass the love on. If you know someone you think would enjoy listening, pass it on, share it, and let them know about it. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a lovely week and see you next time.